You're listening to Compassion Radio. On Compassion Radio today, we welcome back to our dear friend Jim Jennings, Dr. Jennings of Conscience International, a man of the world in every literal sense. And if you haven't heard any of the programs we've done with him over the years, please check our archive out at CompassionRadio.com to hear what he's had to say about the places that we've gone, that you've supported us in going over the years. Jim, welcome back to the microphone.
Thank you, Bram. You are a dear friend. We have traveled together. We have suffered together in the war zone in Ukraine.
Indeed.
And the cold weather at the beginning of that war, which was in February. So thank you for inviting me. We have a lot in common to share.
And I hope we can cover a few things that are important today, because I want us to actually get ahead of the curve a little bit. And first of all, my apologies to our listeners. I'm at the tail end of whatever cold that Nashville, Tennessee managed to give me in coming out here for this trip. So I'm just recovering now. So if I sound like I'm falling off the edge there, Jim's strong voice will carry us all today. You are headed back to Europe soon to meet with many of the folks that you have worked with over many years, helping intellectuals, professors, people that are involved with education to understand the world better, because you're out there traveling the world all the way into refugee camps or into the offices of prime ministers. You have had access to and have documented the real consequence of decisions that men make to the world. And to the least of these, the people that Jesus is most concerned about, even in his earthly ministry. So we're going to let you tell us about the latest chapter. You've been invited back to Europe to do what this time?
I was invited by the Expert Peace Initiative, the expert peacemakers in Europe, to come to Lisbon, Portugal, to speak to a group of highly qualified intellectuals and politicians and activists, including people from the United Nations and the other governments in Europe. Best of all, they're paying my way, so I couldn't say no.
And any professor worth his salt says, when the paid trip comes your way, you take it. Now, you have traveled many, many times through all these countries, but you were trying to prepare for this trip with the latest intel and latest perspective on what's needed to resolve crises in places like Ukraine, in the Holy Land, throughout the West Bank and Gaza. And then, of course, as you mentioned to me earlier today, you've drafted this speech many times. You keep tearing it up because the ground facts keep changing so quickly in world politics right now. Where are you in your headspace right now about what needs to be said to your compadres there in intellectual land?
Well, Bram, this is a very auspicious moment. I think that the conditions are right for at least a ceasefire in Ukraine. My intention is that I will advocate for a ceasefire because not one more Russian soldier or Ukrainian soldier should die. Not one more family should be bombed in their own home. Not one single individual should lose a loved one in this very desperate war. So I'm focused on that. And the diplomacy that's going on at a high level may or may not yield results and may be beneficial or not beneficial. But since the world has been poised on the precipice of World War III for these great many months now, any effort that we make, any initiative that we have that could possibly reach the policymakers and decision makers, we think will be worthwhile to help those men in the trenches, those women who are waiting their return and hoping for their return, those old folks who are huddled in their basements on the edge of the war zone. All these people are our concern at Conscience International.
And they're ours as well with Compassion Ventures. We have dear friends in Ukraine that are right now in the trenches. They're running the ambulance services that are all private there, evacuating the wounded. I agree that it seems in principle that a truce is far preferable to bloodshed. And all these processes are never clean and nice and simple unless you have a total and absolute victory in a war. We don't seem to be having that, but you have to work the nuance of many different perspectives, and many different countries might come to your meeting that have different perspectives on how it fits their own national interest, how the war is negotiated to a close. And you have to kind of work your relationships in a way to find common ground. What is the common ground now for people who work in academia for how to bring a just peace to Ukraine?
I think that we have to look at the long view, both proactively and looking back toward history. If you look at the landscape of Western Asia, or you might say Eastern Europe, it has fluctuated back and forth. Bram, in my own lifetime, I have seen the presence of German troops in Moscow and Russian troops in Berlin. Mm. Think of that.
Yeah.
And that is a fluctuation of many hundreds of miles and many tens of thousands of lives, and now even hundreds of thousands of lives. When people say they want victory because of the principle of the thing, that sounds nice. But so did the Southerners when they wanted to fight the Civil War. Mm-hmm. The recruiter here in North Georgia said to the young man he was trying to recruit, well, let's sign up for the Confederate Army. We can whip the Yankees with cornstalks. After 3 years or so, they came back and he was running for office. And one man in the crowd said, well, you told us that we could whip the Yankees with cornstalks. And he said, guess what? They weren't fighting with cornstalks. So we have to keep in mind the reality of the battle space and the reality of historical fluctuations for that line between Europe and Asia, because it's one land mass. And of course, people say, well, the dictator, Mr. Putin, should not be able to get away with launching a war and hundreds of thousands of deaths cumulatively on both sides. Of course not. And who is going to be the diplomat that will have the temerity to go and shake the hands of a war criminal? Well, it's been done before, and it may happen. But the fact is that Mr. Putin can be punished in other ways than on the battlefield. Their economic inducements or situations about the oil pipelines, the various economic interests. We can have peace if there's a will to have peace. If there's a will to have victory on both sides, if Mr. Putin wants empire, the answer of Europe is no. And if the West wants a defeat of Russia, they must look at Napoleon's venture and Mr. Hitler's ventures and to see that both failed spectacularly.
Before we both get stuck in the ivory tower syndrome, that we can look down this lofty perch of all these historians' epic tales of the past that inform us. I mean, I'm right now working my way through the decline and fall of the Roman Empire for the third time, and it's been very informative to me about how empires rise and fall as a principle of human condition. It's all fine and dandy. You and I have actually had to walk the trenches a bit, literally, and actually welcome refugees off of rafts coming across the Danube River during the war. It's not been a pretty picture. It was disastrous. And just the hope shattered, the children traumatized, and people never going home again in many places of this world. It's not fun to step into all that. But there is another perspective that you have had all these years, and that is kingdom perspective. You find the people of peace wherever you go. You've introduced me to more than a handful of them along the way. So your hopefulness, your vision for what can be, what God's going to make be on this earth that he loves, does have eternal scope. So you don't fear to go where other people would fear to tread because you know that God's got it in hand anyway. There is that kind of duality I see in you. But you also have to speak this techno-speak with all people that work in government or in academia. But if you're talking to somebody at the kitchen table who's hearing this program today, why in the world should we care about what's happening in places like Ukraine or Palestine? Why should we enter into actually exercising and expending some of our own empathy, our own compassion for these people?
Bram, you and I have the same commitment. We went to Ukraine in the first 10 days or 2 weeks of the war when it began. And that was because of the perspective that we have that God cares for every person. We have an interest in protecting life and healing people and bringing people to an understanding of the good news of peace. And so we were there to bring good news that there's some people who care. and that we are willing to put our lives on the line, and we're willing to invest our funds and to try to help people who are there in a suffering condition. And since that time, we have had many teams in 20 cities there. We have sponsored shipments, huge shipments of medicine and food, so that's the outcome of believing a certain way. What is that certain way? That we're all God's children, and we're under obligation to serve humanity and to love people wherever they are.
Yeah, there are certain things that you and I talk about, the red letters that we've been focusing a lot in our ministry on. If we could boil it down to what matters now, Jesus was always about the now, so let's listen to him. But they're not just suggestions. They're not even a policy. They're not just an ethic of maybe how to do things and how to decide. There are literally, at the end of the book, commandments. These are things that aren't open for negotiation anymore. God says through Jesus, this is it. You say you believe in me. You say you love me. You say you follow me. This is it. So do it. And that kind of black and white in the red letters is something that the church seems to be having a real hard time with right now. Why do you think that?
Well, many people don't have a frame of reference like you just described, even though they may be church members, let's say, or they may be involved deeply in understanding the Christian message. But, you know, it's a different thing to have an intellectual awareness of, let's say, theology, and then to actually put it into practice and take that first step and step forward and do what you can. Again, it comes down to the individual person. What is that widow huddled in the basement in the outskirts of Donetsk or Kharkiv right now? Dnipropetrovsk is the newest place, and that's way up on the Dnieper River. And that's a Russian launch that they've just started in the last few days before the so-called peace talks even began. I cannot forget in Kyiv, where I was on the train and saw a soldier dressed in fatigues, ready to go by the train down to the front lines. And with him was his beautiful girlfriend with long red hair, a beautiful couple. They were saying goodbye tearfully, not knowing if he would ever return again.
And many right now are not.
That is so epic in terms of the winds of war.
Yeah.
And I remember when the Normandy celebration took place, the most recent one, the chaplain of the United States military happened to be a lady at this time, and she uttered a prayer. In her prayer, she used the phrase, as the winds of war gather. And that startled me because she knows something that maybe the rest of us don't.
We've got more coming up from Dr. Jim Jennings of Conscious International right after this.
Compassion Radio has been committed to bringing you the truth about what God is really doing in the world and how He is bringing about the salvation, redemption, life, and growth of His kingdom wherever it is to be found. So much has changed and is changing in this world. At the same time, I'm discovering in a deeper way how absolutely consistent God is in times of trial. So I'll ask you, will you help? Just call today with your first gift and consider making it monthly. Call us 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. If you're on the move right now, you can also text COMPASSION to 53445 to make your gift immediately. God bless you. And now, back to our discussion.
The chaplain of the United States military happened to be a lady at this time, and she uttered a prayer. In her prayer, she used the phrase, as the winds of war gather. And that startled me because she knows something that maybe the rest of us don't. But if you look all around the world, you will see the winds of war have already begun to gather. So those who believe in peace must really at this time step forward and say, let's have an arrangement whereby these people can be saved, the civilians can go back to their homes, and the political issues can be solved by people of goodwill who can work on them. Now, that may not always be possible, and I firmly believe and resisting evil right in front of you. So that's not in question. Is this the time to do that or to say, let's stop the madness and let's have a peace initiative that will work, and then let's see what happens about solving the terrible health problems, even survival problems of the people in the war zone.
And that the mop-up operations, they would call it military terms, comes after the disaster. Then you got to figure out, how do we save what's savable? How do we dispense with what needs to be dispensed with? How do we start over? Those are all things that are done with numbers and spreadsheets and bulldozers. They're not about the souls. And you are a soul care person. You and I go to travel these places often because we're taking the temperature. We are the thermometers of the planet. We find out where it's still hot, where there's death and coldness, where the comfort is. We can test that by actually visiting the people that live there. Our job, though, is kind of to come back in through media, through our letters we write, the funds we raise, to raise the thermostat and get people here a little hotter about the things that God cares about around the world and remind him that they're not in comfort. They're not solved problems. These are ongoing disasters. And bringing us into that is not so much just about solving a problem that someone else has. I really do believe what we're doing is solving a problem that we have, which is not just coziness, but an unwillingness to enter into where God's heart is. And I don't want to see us suffer from starvation of soul, where we're not experiencing what God experiences, and therefore we don't experience him. I do really do want people to experience an intimacy and a closeness with God and a reality in their faith that really only tends to come with saying yes when God says, what's coming next is going to be uncomfortable. But it's where I am, and I really would love for you to be with me there. So we literally go there sometimes, you quite often. But I don't want people to feel like they are not part of this thing, like they're separated by thousands of miles. You're not. The next step you take could be the very thing that pushes you right at the very center of God's action because you prayed a prayer that opened your heart to whatever God had for you and for your future in being part of God's plan. That may be involved with going with you on a project to Ukraine or to Burkina Faso or Rwanda or Goma, Eastern Congo. But there may be something as simple as just saying, I'd love to get Jim's newsletter, read about it, pray about it every day. That's the kind of thing that I know we always say we start with, but it is a big deal. Praying, getting involved with conversation with God himself is huge when it comes to these issues, because I do believe God inspires us to pray for things that do work, that he is already blessed, that he's already planning for us to be entering into. It's not like we're just scrambling around the room trying to figure out an idea to do something. God has his plans. He has his people. Just a matter of asking him who they are, where they are, and how to pray.
You can go to 100 countries, and if you do, in each of them, you will meet some people that you immediately bond to because they have the human spirit. They have the, what I call, spiritual perception or understanding of the realities of human life and bonding. That is something that is missing largely in this world of largely isolation, electronic connections. But you can find the same thing in the streets of Kansas City or Seattle or Richmond, Virginia. It's possible to do a good thing by just connecting with others. Yeah. And so the motivation to enable you is there. And when that's there, then marvelous things can happen. We're actually tasked to bring about peace.
Yes, we are. And you as an organization have taken that on as one of your front and center objectives. Be where the peace can be made and be present.
We have, in years past, operated Academics for Peace, in which we took college professors of all different persuasions or beliefs and interacted with some of the most considered enemy nations or problematical countries like Iran, Syria, and some of the groups in Afghanistan that may be dangerous. You know that. You've been there yourself. This is also part of our command. Not everybody does it, and not everybody should do it, because it could be risky to be arrested by these people, to be threatened, to be questioned, interrogated. It is no fun at all. Some of the non-governmental groups, we call them terrorist groups. But you can also connect with them on an authentic level and tell them, this is what I believe. And why do you believe the way you do?
And you learned some of that even from Brother Andrew, by the way. He would just walk in there and say, it's about the gospel. You want to kill me? Fine. But I'm coming in the front door. I'm not leaving by a back door. You know, you and I are look eye to eye on these things. And you've exemplified that. And Norm showed that to me over the years. You go where God sends you to go. I just finished watching a couple weeks ago the miniseries that they did in Britain about the bombing of the Pan Am flight back in 1989. And Muammar Gaddafi's agents being behind that and how long it took them to solve the problem. But it was a private doctor who lost a daughter on that flight that persisted towards justice. And the notion of what justice was had to be challenged and really thought through difficult terms all through that series. What does it really mean to pursue justice for the oppressed and those who were injured or killed by those who committed violence? And it was always a question of background that never quite resolved well. But he pursued through it, and he was one of those people that did the same kind of ethical behavior in the presence of his enemies that you talk about, Jim. There's scenes of him stepping right up to Muammar Gaddafi and actually choosing to shake the hand and to actually dialogue with an individual, a person there. And the respect that's gained by someone who's willing to stand for those who are oppressed, to those who have power get it, because they know that lives are in the palm of their hands. But they respond to those whose lives are in the heart of the king. They just do, because they know they have prophets in their midst. And prophets, I think, have always been about standing for the oppressed and standing for those who cannot speak. It's not just about proclaiming a word from God to a king. The word from God to a king is always going to be about his chosen children, the ones he cares about the most anyway. And you've done both. You've walked right into the courts of power, and you've walked into the refugee camps and handed out food supplies. You want to, at the end of this coming trip you talked about, not just talk to professors, not just talk to people in government. You want to go on from that trip and proceed straight to the Holy Land and go into the West Bank and Gaza, if they'll let you. Why do you tend to do these things at the same time you do these junkets where you're doing lectures?
Well, they paid for my ticket is one reason.
You're halfway there, aren't you?
But I'm halfway there. But I'm flying into the war zone in the West Bank and hopefully Gaza, if the UN people will cooperate with me or I will cooperate with them.
Yeah.
But, Bram, I have to tell you that some of my fondest memories are traveling with you into war zones in Central Africa and in Eastern Europe and various places, but also with Norm Nelson, whom I love very much, and we had such a companionship and friendship and the same objectives, and with Brother Andrew as well. So those are among my fondest memories. The objectives were the same. The willingness to take risks and to be involved in some of the heavy lifting of investigating how do we help these people. The problems are enormous. We need help. We need people to stand alongside us to encourage that. But I went into Syria and met with the dictator Bashar al-Assad. And some people said, well, you shouldn't do that. And one Syrian who had been imprisoned, he said, I'm not a supporter of Assad. I said, why? He said, Ibn Hayya Hayya in Arabic, the son of a snake is a snake.
Yeah.
But I met with him in the interest of peace. And now he's, after such a long time, he didn't take our advice to reform his country. And the result is 600,000 Syrians dead and 5 or 6 million, even more, fled the country. It's been devastated. They have to reconstruct the country. We can try, and we can fail, and we can try again. But I think that you, Norm Nelson, Brother Andrew, had the same spirit.
We are never called to not speak truth. So even if it's not taken, it's not accepted, if God puts us in a place where we can speak truth to power, we're mandated to do this. And not because we are superior or because we have some kind of moral superiority complex. We don't go in there to proclaim our innocence and their culpability in crimes. We are simply there to say what God has put on our lips to speak because we know it's true. It's from his word. It's from his people. It's from the facts on the ground. We can't not tell the truth. But you also have learned the silver tongue, which is to be able to speak the language that can be heard so that the truth embedded within the message can be taken in. And possibly, sometimes, it's taken to heart. But either way, God's heart, I know, is moved by those who are willing to say the truth when necessary, even at personal cost. And you've been that example to me. So you got to speak truth this next trip. If I could get you to boil it down to one simple message you would try to get across to your academic friends, and then perhaps to other people who are in power on the ground that are still prosecuting these wars in Gaza and the West Bank, what's got to lay on your heart right now that you feel like you got to say it or you're going to die?
Conscience International believes that human conscience is part of the imago Dei, or the image of God, in each one of us. So I can talk to the worst murderer or dictator on earth and know that somewhere there, even though it doesn't appear so, there is a human conscience as a part of creation. If you can touch that, you can perhaps make progress. I've stopped wanting to be a peacemaker because Scripture says, blessed are the peacemakers. Sometimes we can't make peace. We can only advocate peace. So yeah. I rather would say I'm a peace advocate, and that should appeal to everybody on all sides of any conflict. I think to go there and to represent that we accept your humanity, we don't accept your deeds, we want to see a correction in this current situation to save souls of other people's lives who are being destroyed by this terrible conflict.
Dr. Jim Jennings of Conscious International has a lot more to share with us on tomorrow's program, so I hope you'll tune in then. And concerning today's program, if you missed anything, just find the podcast streaming at our website, CompassionRadio.com.
Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. And our website is CompassionRadio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.